Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And today we have with us Bishop Joseph Strickland, who has served as the Bishop of Tyler, Texas since 2012. He was ordained in 1985 and assigned to Immaculate Conception Parish in Tyler, Texas, and served as parochial vicar until 1989. He was named the first vocation director for the diocese in 1987. Bishop Strickland completed his canonical studies with a licentiate in canon law in 1994 and was assigned as rector of the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Tyler. He was appointed judicial vicar for the Diocese of Tyler in 1995 and named a prelate of honor with the title Monsignor by His Holiness Pope John Paul II in February of 1996. On September 29, 2012, it was announced that His Holiness Pope Benedict XVI had chosen Father Strickland as the fourth bishop of the Diocese of Tyler. Today we'll be discussing his new book, Light and Leaven, The Challenge of the Laity in the 21st Century. Welcome to the show, Bishop.
Thanks, Pete.
Well, it's great to have you here, and excellent book. And to kind of get us going here today, I converted in 1996. And in my time in the church, I've seen what I would call a general backsliding in the church somewhat as a whole. In your opinion, what has caused this? And is it just me, or does it seem to be accelerating in recent years?
Well, Pete, I don't think it's just you. I think there are probably multiple causes. One of them, and one thing, let me say, I commend you as a convert from what I'm seeing. I'm a cradle Catholic, as we say. I think the converts are some of the strongest Catholics because you've embraced the faith, because you were obviously searching for truth and you found the truth in the Catholic Church. I'm grateful that I've come to that truth more and more deeply through my journey of 62 years. But as far as the cause, I think it just a very broad term that is used is secularism. I think it really, what we're seeing comes down to a real loss of faith, loss of belief in the supernatural, and then it just sort of cascades from there. I would see one key moment that I think is very significant is the rejection of Humanae Vitae in 1968. That truth continues to be the truth. It's a challenging truth that most of the world and much of the church really still doesn't embrace, but I would point to that as not maybe a symptom as much as anything, but certainly a lack of really believing, and there are many elements of that And that's, I guess, one of the reasons for a book like Light and Leaven is to really joyfully, hopefully focus on the truth that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came to share. He is revelation. He is the person that God sent to reveal truth to us. He is that font of truth, truth incarnate. And I think really looking at the reasons for the erosion of the faith come down to this. The best hope we have for reinvigorating the faith is coming to know Jesus Christ. If you look at the first century, and this is something that's really dawned on me in the recent weeks with everything that we're dealing with in the church and in the world, in the nation, the apostles, the early church in the first century, had deep faith, an encounter with Jesus Christ, and that's pretty much all they had. Mm-hmm. They had Jesus, and that's about it. And I think we have to go back to those roots. And in a sense, Pete, I would say what caused the world to be where it is in 2020, as far as faith, as far as the world, I think we've lost touch with the truth of Jesus Christ and really deeply knowing him as God's divine son and believing what he's told us.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things you write about in the book, in the early sections of the book, is the role of a bishop. And I don't think most people have any clue what that entails. You also point out how recent years, the bishop's responsibility have pivoted to more of a business management type role and less of a role of prayer. So could you kind of give us a little walkthrough of, one, what the day of a bishop looks like and what that entails, and two, what caused this pivot, do you think?
Well, again, there are, I think, a lot of causes for the pivot, as you say, but what and I'm continuing to grow into being a bishop, I have to admit, but we should be men who are successors of the apostles, and all of this is in the basic teaching of the churches, in the catechism, it's in canon law, it's in the directory for bishops. But as far as how the bishops of the world operate, where there's much more of a tendency to become managers than successors of the apostles. Going back to the first century, the apostles had nothing to manage. There was nothing there. Mm-hmm. They were going out, as Jesus had told them, it's in the gospel, go out to all the world and preach the good news, baptizing in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So I think bishops have, as a body of worldwide, the tendency has become more, because we have huge dioceses. I mean, my diocese isn't huge, but there's some that are just gigantic as far as just management and have multiple auxiliary bishops helping with the management. And I think that we need to remember our primary role is to be pastors, to be successors of the apostles, and to have that perspective always of seeking the salvation of souls. That's what the code of canon law, the last canon in the code, says. All of this is about the salvation of souls. And I think as bishops, that really is an emphasized, and it tends to get forgotten in the day-to-day. I have to say, Pete, that my day-to-day as a bishop has changed significantly. I mean, I've only been a bishop 8 years, but it's changed significantly in the past 2 to 3 years to be much more about direct involvement in teaching. And that's what I think it should be. Bishops make a lot of promises at their ordination. I think it's about 6 or 8 different specific promises. And one of those is to guard the deposit of faith. And that is really what I've focused on in the past couple of years as we've seen more and more this chaos and confusion in the church and in the world. to guard the deposit of faith is a solemn promise that I make. And I don't see that happening a lot. I think bishops are too easily caught up in the management, maybe, or for whatever reasons. I hesitate to say that any bishop doesn't truly believe in everything that the catechism teaches, but some of their actions would definitely, I mean, I'm contacted by people all the time that wonder what bishops do believe. And I think we have to really, in order to guard the deposit of faith, we have to be men willing, like the apostles, if we're their successors, we have to be willing to die for that faith, to really, and not, I mean, I'm not really expecting martyrdom. I mean, who knows what happens in the future as the world is unraveling around us, but we have to be willing to have that, we have to have that mindset of this is to die for. This is truth that we can't let go of. As this afternoon met with a young family man and saying, how do we navigate all this? And I quoted St. Peter in the gospel as Jesus says, are you going to leave too? And St. Peter says, Lord, to whom shall we go? And I think that is ultimately what bishops need to be reminding people of, is Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He is the Lord of the universe. We just celebrated the solemnity of Jesus Christ, King of the universe. And I think really, Pete, some of it comes down to really and truly believing the words that the liturgy speaks, the words in the Word of God, the words in our prayers, our Father who art in heaven. Do we really believe that, or is it just a prayer we've memorized that we don't really think about? I think many people, if you really come down to it, do have basic faith in God, in Jesus Christ as his Son, and for Catholics that the church is the church that he established. But when it comes down to, okay, how do you apply those basic beliefs to the choices you make in daily life, then it starts to fragment and fragment pretty seriously. So mm-hmm. I really believe, as one bishop, I'm just one bishop of 33 counties in East Texas, but I feel compelled to guard the deposit of faith for the people that live here, about 1.5 million people. The vast majority of them aren't even Catholic, but it's not a Catholic truth that bishops are guarding. It's the truth that God has revealed to us through his Son. And I think we've all got to take that much more seriously, and we have to decide, do we really believe what the church teaches or not? Mm-hmm. I believe it. I believe in the Eucharist. I believe in all of the sacraments. I believe what Christ tells us about at the end of our lives and at the end of time, there will be a great sorting of the image that he uses as the sheep and the goats, those who are destined for salvation and those who are not. And even that among bishops is debated these days. Will anyone go to hell? How many people will be condemned? We don't know, but if you read what Christ says in the gospel, he makes it very clear there will be a day of reckoning. And here, as we come to the end of November, the liturgy very much focuses on that. The daily mass readings come from the book of Revelation. And I think that we've got to really pay attention to that. And I feel like it's my job, I promise, to guard the deposit of faith and not allow these trends that have been building over decades of my life. But the trends of, you know, the sexual revolution, I think that's at the root of a lot of it. There is no sexual morality for a lot of people. And even now, people in the church are trying to dismantle that and mm-hmm. redefine marriage. And as far as I'm concerned, it can't be redefined, because it's true as God has laid it out, has revealed to us those tendencies in society and even within the church to redefine these ancient truths that are part of the deposit of faith. It's not going to work. It's not going to last. As far as, I mean, if it is truth, I believe that. And if it's the truth, then we've got to, I believe ultimately, bishops are guarding the deposit of faith, guarding the truth that Christ has revealed to us.
Mm-hmm. You know, Bishop, one of the things that keeps popping up in interviews this year, particularly during this pandemic, when many of us needed the church the most, it seemingly abandoned us by closing its doors. Now, in saying that, there were a few bishops, such as yourself, that were speaking out and continuing to provide comfort. But by and large, it seems as if, at least here in the States, we left the playing field empty. And it was a playing field that we already knew from last year's Pew study that consisted of 70% of the Catholics sitting in the pews not believing in the real presence. So in some sense, we've told those Catholics with an eight-month pause in church attendance in a lot of dioceses around the country that now they might have this sense that, well, I just went 8 months without attending Mass and nothing really happened to me. Life's fine. How do we get those people back?
Well, Pete, you like to ask these big questions. I really, once again, I guess I have simple answers, but profound. Some of the most profound things I think are in our human reality can be expressed very simply. Mm-hmm. They've got to come to know Jesus Christ. They've got to really, and, you know, tragically, as you said, the Pew study that prompted me to declare this year that we've just are ending as we start Advent this Sunday, the liturgical year, the year of the Eucharist, because if we don't believe he's really there, then it helps to erode the belief that he really is, that he is Lord of the universe, that everything the church says isn't just sort of a nice, you know, formulary of a group of people who just appreciate these kinds of this kind of imagery, but it's talking about reality. So I think what the church failed to do in the midst of this pandemic was to really be the church. That failure was already there. In some ways, the pandemic just sort of, and which I think it's done with a lot of things, it's pulled the curtain back and showed us that the church, the heart of the church is weak. I think we've seen the same thing with education in this country. I mean, look at all that what the pandemic has done to grade schools and high schools and university. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't responded adequately. So not to let the church off the hook, it's tragic that the church wasn't strong and able to really call people to a deeper faith as she has in previous pandemics. I mean, some of the greatest saint stories are saints who lived through pandemics. St. Charles Borromeo was a great saint who lived through a pandemic and helped to feed starving people in the midst of a pandemic, you know, hundreds of years ago. But the church was weak as this pandemic took over the world, and that weakness was revealed. The church is still the church, as Christ promised. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. I believe that promise of Jesus Christ, as I believe when he says bread and wine becomes my body and blood. We have to believe, if we believe who he is, we believe his words. If we believe anyone, we believe in the Son of God. And I think we've got to return to that faith. Honestly, Pete, I've, as a bishop, as a man of faith, as a spiritual father, I've had to pray a lot and to reflect on what did Christ really mean when he said, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. It will continue until the end of the age, and that he will be with us until the end of the age. I've had to really look more deeply at that, and the presumptions that I had, basically the world would hum along as it is. That may not be what Christ means, but to say that the church will prevail, it's the font of truth. It's the font of that he's offered us to share the truth with every generation as it comes along. And so I believe more than ever in the church, honestly. But she is weakened. And one way that I've read about it and see it described, or I think is accurate, you can just look at the cross. And Pete, I'm sure you've heard these images. You know, it's nothing really new or dramatic or anything, but just look at a cross. It has a vertical bar pointing to heaven, and it has a horizontal bar that, in a sense, points to the world, to the horizontal life that we live. I think the church has become too horizontal and not enough vertical. Mm-hmm. And the mystery is of the church is that the Christ is at the heart of the cross that he died on, the intersection of the vertical and the horizontal of this world and the supernatural world of God in heaven. Christ is the intersection of those two. And if we just concentrate on the horizontal, a lot of bishops have criticized me and a lot of laity. Plenty of people, you know, think I'm totally off the mark because I'm not saying, you know, we've got to worry about, certainly we worry about the poor. We worry about all the injustices, whether it's unjust treatment of people at borders or anything that's happening. But to solely focus on that is forgetting who we are, that we're children of God. We're mm-hmm. called to a supernatural, eternal destiny with God. We're not here to just manage this world and make it as people peaceful and productive as possible. I happen to believe, and if we look at the church through the ages, much of what this civilization as it now exists on or is built on is what Christianity brought to the world, what the Catholic Church brought to the world: stable families, a strong idea of marriage between a man and a woman, a moral commitment that marriage commitment should never be violated. I mean, it's right there in the Ten Commandments. So really, the Judeo-Christian tradition is the bedrock of Western civilization, of the world that we know, with all the marvelous technology and all the advances that have been possible because a basic peaceful world was allowed to develop, guided by the truth revealed through the Son of God, Jesus Christ. So when we see it unraveling, we've got to return. I've talked to many people about returning to the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what I try to do as a bishop, to call my flock back to the sanctity of life, the sanctity of marriage, the sanctity of recognizing God created us. And how did he create us? He created us as male and female. All of these other options are not of God. And we've got to just honestly acknowledge that. Yes, they're troubled people. Yes, they're things that need to be addressed. And the church is accused of being bigoted because it says that homosexual marriage is not God's plan. But that's not bigotry. That's really helping people to be guided by the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what we've got to be stronger in. And that's what, in my small diocese, that's what I'm trying to do. I don't claim to be doing it perfectly. I'm a sinful man, and I make mistakes. But we have to continually return to Christ and the truth that he's revealed to us.
Mm. You know, kind of dovetail off that a bit. As I mentioned, I came into the church and so I received that instruction when I first came in, obviously, in 1996. One of the things that I see, and we talk about this a lot in my men's group Saturday mornings, we have a TMYY group here that I lead, is catechesis and how poor catechesis led us to where we are today in some sense. Some of the things that I hear that people don't understand or have never heard of that are cradle Catholics that have been in the church a lot longer than I, it kind of amazes me that they weren't taught that. So, I mean, how did we get there and how do we reverse that? What do we need to do to bring proper catechesis back?
Well, I think you're really touching on something that is very significant, because poor catechesis results in people really not knowing the faith. And as you said, there are a lot of things that people we were just sort of operating on autopilot. And then again, I think COVID-19 and other things that have happened recently in the past 2 or 3 years have just sort of pulled the curtain back on how weak people's tie to the church is. I mean, as I've said, you know, many times as I talk to people, you look at the martyrs, people don't die for something that they are vaguely familiar with and just sort of do out of habit. You don't die for something like that. You just say, well, I'm going to walk away if it's threatening my life. And I think that sadly, that's where we are. A lot of people just walk away. You ask, how do we get them back? I think one thing that COVID is revealing is we had lost a lot of people really, as far as really living the Catholic faith that obviously you're committed to, that I'm committed to. You're doing this interview because you believe in what the church has to offer, but too many people really haven't embraced that. And poor catechesis is at the root of it. I like to say, Pete, that, I mean, it breaks my heart to see where this nation is mm-hmm. with the division and people doing things that are just un-American, really. And I think we've got a problem with people not knowing the Constitution, not knowing their basic, what being an American is, what the United States is really built on. That is all confused and diluted. And many young people that are out there protesting really have no idea of really what the nation is about. And I think we've got the same problem, in a sense, the civic catechesis of knowing the Constitution, knowing how this nation basically functions and what its values are. We've got that problem in the nation and the same problem in the church. And when you don't know the basic truth that guides a human civilization or organization, then you're in trouble. And I think the nation and the church are in trouble because too many people don't really know what it's all about. And so they're easily led into darkness, into falsehood, into false gospel, into false models of what it is to be an American when you don't really have roots in the truth that literally in both instances, people have died for us to have this nation. Mm-hmm. And Christ himself and many martyrs after him have died for the faith to flourish in the world. So we have an obligation, and that's why I established an institute here in the diocese to work on catechesis and evangelization, because people don't know the basic truth of the gospel, the basic deposit of faith, of the Catholic faith. And if you don't know the truth, you can easily be led into the darkness of false teachings that may just be somebody's fabrication, but isn't based in the gospel and in these ancient truths that stretch back 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Bishop, in closing, we find ourselves in some pretty unprecedented times, and I hate saying that line because it seems I say it a lot in interviews lately, but we have a pandemic, we have an election now with more questions than answers, we've watched protests and cities being burned. There's a lot of anxiety and fear out there in our country. In closing, what words of comfort can you provide those listening today?
Well, the best thing I can say, Pete, is look at history. There have been devastating pandemics before. There have been turmoil where nations have risen and fallen. Through all of that, I really encourage people that are listening to this to cling to Christ, especially in the real presence, in the Eucharist. He's really there. As he promised, he would be with us until the end of the age. He is in many different ways, he's present, but really present, body and blood, soul and divinity in the Eucharist. Cling to the Eucharist and cling to the Blessed Virgin Mary. It's an image of, or a vision that St. John Bosco had that I keep returning to. He has, where we are really, the church, and for us, the church and the state, the whole world, is like a ship that is being tossed by falsehood and evil and all sorts of things. And in St. John Bosco's vision, he has the pillar of the Eucharist and the pillar of the Blessed Virgin Mary, a woman sinless because of God's power in her that she said yes to. We, as you know, as a good Catholic, we've never worshiped Mary. We will never worship Mary. She is simply the model disciple. But I think that vision of St. John Bosco is the hope that I cling to. Christ really present in the tabernacles of the world, in the Eucharist, reverence that, come to know him more deeply through prayer in his presence, and pray the rosary and other devotions to the Blessed Virgin Mary. That's the best that I can offer. And I think it's those two pillars of strength that will help individuals and families and communities, the church and nations, to return to a more peaceful, more enlightened world in the sense of the light of Christ and not the darkness and the confusion and the fear and the turmoil that we're seeing so much of. So to me, the best hope is stronger faith in the Eucharist and in the Blessed Virgin Mary, who is always interceding for us.
Great advice, Bishop. I just want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule today and spending it with us. Where can people find your book, Light and Leaven, The Challenge of the Laity in the 21st Century?
Just go to the website for Catholic Answers, and you can order it there. You can also go to our Institute website, stphilipinstitute.org. Philip with one L. They can order it through that Institute website as well.
All right. Again, thank you for taking time out of your schedule and spending with us. With that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Until next time, God bless.
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.